Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I'm the host of this show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, and we're excited that you've joined us today. On today's show, we're going to have something just a little bit different. We're going to have a guest by the name of Dale Hansen. Dale is a sports broadcaster out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We're going to have him come on to talk about the Power Five conferences and their impact on college sports. And we'll be getting to him in a little bit. If this is your first time to listen to the program, congratulations. We think that we are the best-kept secret in all of tennis. We are on each week broadcasting shows from many different parts of America on Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock Central Time. We have Lisa Goodman-Stone. She does Parenting Aces. On Wednesday before I come on the air, we have Chuck Creasy out of the Citadel. He does American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. There is my show, The American College Experience. And then on Thursday evening, we have the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association, John Denise, and he hosts the broadcast as well. And his show comes on at about 5:30 Central Standard Time. So we're excited that you've joined us today. We've got many good things going on out there in the college tennis world, and want to keep you up to date on some of those. It's been an interesting week, to say the least, and we'll start today with some information, some news about the Division III Men's National Team Indoor Championship. This championship's held at Gustavus Adolphus College, and the winner of that event was Trinity, Texas University. The Tigers capped off a weekend by defeating the Emory Eagles 5-4 in the finals. This was Trinity's first appearance in the championship match, while Emory had competed in the finals for a record 9th time. As many of you know, we've talked about the scoring changes in college tennis, and this does not affect the smaller divisions. The Division II, III, NAIA, and JUCO are still playing a dual match format, usually the best of 9 matches, with the six singles matches and 3 doubles matches being played. And they continue to play the doubles matches to an 8-game pro set, and doesn't seem to be letting down any of the excitement that's involved in college tennis. The weekend produced a great result for Trinity. This was Trinity's first time, like we said, to make it to the finals, and it came down to the doubles. All 3 courts were highly contested, and each team took control of one of the matchups, while the third position remained on serve until the last couple of games. And that's when Trinity capitalized on 2 easy high volley misses to secure the break and serve out an 8-6 victory. Trinity coach Russell McKinden said doubles was big again. Even though we were up at 1 and lost, the twos did a great job of coming back, and the threes played pretty consistent overall. I knew we had momentum, but Emory does not go away. We had a 2-1 lead over them in this tournament 2 years ago and got swept in the singles. They absolutely thrive in this kind of atmosphere. And Emory did make a run, as you can tell by the score, as it ended up 5-4. And that doubles point became the critical point as they were able to split the singles matches came into the match really focusing on mental toughness and not allowing any outside distractions to get in our way, said McKendis. We had strong leaders on early. We had our strong senior leaders on early, and I thought they showed great resolve by keeping their emotions in check during all the momentum swings. McKendis also said being a first-time finalist at this event was a milestone, but we want to learn from our mistakes in the past and not be satisfied with the accomplishment. I honestly could not be more proud of the team that we put together this season. We want to wish Trinity the best of luck as they venture out into the outdoor season, into the Division III world. We're excited here in Texas to have another representative win one of these big tournaments. Moving on, we're going to talk a little bit about the men's national rankings at Division I, and there have been quite a few shakeups. Hopefully you've been able to keep track of your favorite team. As for me, I try to keep track of many teams, and there have been many, many exciting dual matches played so far, and this is why the rankings have been shaken up. This week at number one, we've got the University of Southern California, which was last week number two, and University of Oklahoma, which was number one, moving down to number two. And the flip-flop happened because University of Oklahoma lost out to Texas A&M University at Texas A&M University this last week. Number three, the University of Illinois moves up from number six. Duke University at number four moves up from number seven. Baylor University stays at number five. The University of Texas moves up from number 10 to number 6. University of Georgia slides from number 3 to number 7. Ohio State University moves up from 9. Texas A&M University moves up from 13. And the University of Mississippi moves all the way up from 15 to number 10. The thing I like most about this is there are three Texas schools ranked inside the top 10, TCU at number 15, so that puts us four within the top 15, and Texas tennis seems to be thriving in the college tennis environment with the Big 12 leading the way. On the women's side, a few more shakeups as you look at it. University of North Carolina coming off their national indoor championships win stays at number one. There's a flip-flop at two and three. Georgia has moved up from number three, and the University of Florida slides down from number two to number three. University of Southern California is at number four, coming up from number 11. And number five, we've got the University of Virginia, which was number seven. At number six, we've got Baylor University holding steady at number six. And number seven, Stanford University climbs up from number 10. And at number eight, California moves down from the fifth position. At number nine, we've got the University of Alabama, which slid just a little bit from number eight. And then at number 10, we've got the University of Michigan, which rides up from 15. So you can tell that there are many dual matches going on over there and causing quite a bit of shakeup within the rankings. Most noticeably on the women, we had UCLA slide from number 4 to number 11. And I also should make it known that on the men's side, UCLA has slid down from, or University of Virginia slid down from number 4 to 11. And the University of North Carolina slid down from number 8 to number 19. So that was last week's top 10. Now, there was an interesting piece of news that came out of the University of Notre Dame. And it wasn't necessarily about their team. It was a former coach that wrote a letter to the college tennis fan, and I hope that you'll go to itatennis.com and catch up on a lot of it. And some of it is what we're going to visit with about today, not necessarily tie in directly, but want to let people know that head coach or former head coach Bobby Bayless wrote an interesting piece. And his criticism comes to the people that are not willing to change from the ITA to the current ITA format. And as many of you know, we've touched on that. Essentially what that is dropping the doubles from 8-game pro sets to 6 games, playing no ad scoring, and then eliminating the warm-up between the two teams. What Coach Bayless has to say is that what critics don't realize is that they're doing damage, perhaps, to our great game. And it says, why did the ITA go down this path? Herein lies the key to understanding how and why we arrived at our current destinations. Forces far beyond the scope of college tennis and financial in nature are rapidly descending upon the world of college sports. And that's precisely why we wanted to have Dale Hansen on the air today, is to discuss some of this. Litigation, an amped-up arms race, and an out-of-control economic climate are creating a landscape that, by all responsible accounts, will change the face of college athletics forever. His factors that are causing this include cost under the names of unionization, cost of attendance, financial profit from players' likenesses, concussion studies, additional nutritional supplements, and many more. Revenue sports are going to get bigger and bigger pieces of the pie than heretofore allocated. College athletics programs are headed for gigantic shortfalls of money. The likely answer to this increasing call for more financial support for the revenue sports, dropping non-revenue sports. These facts are beyond deniability and rapidly becoming reality. Legislation is being proposed to drop the number of required sports significantly. And he says that the battle for the survival of Olympic sports is at hand. And yes, this may be true at some of the Power Five conferences. I could understand where they might feel in trouble, but the small schools, the real Division I's out there, may not necessarily see it this way. And I'm hoping that it doesn't go down this road. But we've really started to see a lot of people scared and seem to be wanting to adopt different scoring formats to try to break the fall, so to speak. Coach Bayless says it's time to face the music, and the ITA worked through a painstaking and transparent process to find ways to make our game fit in the changing prism of 21st century life. Actively seeking input from our membership, the process worked its way through town hall meetings in each ITA regional event, questionnaires, and straw votes at our convention and the NCAA championships. Naturally, some of the membership preferred the status quo and no change. But many of these coaches had not been the beneficiary of the advice and warnings passed our way. He says that he would have voted for no change had I not been convinced of the catastrophic consequences facing college tennis. It is in the spirit that I try to understand the critics, as I've tried to explain to some of my good friends who strongly oppose the change. No ad tennis is far better than no tennis. No one with current knowledge denies the coming train wreck that will cause many sports to be dropped. He goes on to say how he would save college tennis, and I would encourage you to go to itatennis.com and see his letter, because it's quite interesting, and he's put forth some very good ideas as far as why it would happen, but you've got to remember that he's at the University of Notre Dame. And you've got these Power Five conferences, which represent, if I remember right, about 65, 69 teams out there, and they are the main headliners in college football and college basketball. These Power Five conferences consist of the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and also the Pac-12. And like I mentioned, we're going to talk heavily about those today as we get Dale Hansen on here in just a little bit. Now, I want to let you know that I'm going to call Dale Hansen, and this is not something that I use a lot of, but we're going to give it a try and see if we can bring him into the air. So bear with me just for moments. Got to dial in his number.
Excuse me. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Hanson. Are you there?
Yes.
This is Jason Haynes from the UR Tennis Network.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
I'm doing fine today. I want to thank you for coming on today. This is a little stretch for us here about college tennis, but I wanted to get after someone that might understand some of the things that are going on in big-time sports world as far as college sports go, and so I invited you in, and you do have a small, albeit small, connection to college tennis.
Not much of a connection to college tennis, obviously, but I follow college sports quite a bit. So, and as most people tell you, I've got an opinion on almost everything. So, fire away.
Well, we're glad to have you on today. And before I get on air, can you tell us anything about your college tennis connection, and that being John Peterson, who's a great coach at Tyler Junior College.
Well, I mean, that unfortunately, to him and so many others, that's that's pretty much it. I grew up in the shadow of my cousin Johnny, and then he went on to some great things at Tyler Junior College down there, but. I did a tennis magazine show years ago for Tennis Magazine Reports, but that was on the professional tennis. But as you mentioned in your email, college tennis isn't much of a player anywhere in the country, and it's certainly not in Texas. So, as far as college tennis is concerned, quite frankly, I know very little about the game.
Yeah, and that's we were hoping that would be the case, because we're not really going to talk about college tennis today. We're going to talk about
Well, that's a good thing, but you also mentioned in your email, about why isn't it on more local sportscasts, and it's a question that I get quite frequently about a lot of sports. And the reality is, we don't cover sports on the local sportscast because they're great sports or because they're, a great game or some such thing. We're basically appealing to the mass audience as best we can. And, we've done feature stories and the like. I don't remember any college reports off the top of my head, but quite frankly, I'm sure in my 30 years in Dallas, we've done something along those lines, because we're always looking for good human interest stories. But for the most part, we're kind of a bread and potato, meat and potatoes sportscast with, football, basketball, baseball, and hockey.
Yes, sir. So, and this brings us to an interesting point. In the college tennis world, we've had a lot of conferences, and the Super Five being the Power Five conferences is what we're going to get into today. But the Power mm-hmm. Five seem to believe that if they put college tennis on TV, more and more people are going to watch. And I just want to hear from you, do you think that would be the case?
I don't know. It might be. I still think you'd need to find that hook and drive it with personalities. I think it's basically the same argument that people have made about soccer. If you promote soccer more, you put it on TV more, it would become more popular. And it is during the Olympics, for example, and then that's about it. Maybe during the World Cup, it gets a little more of a splash. But tennis, to me in particular, has always been more of a participant sport. The people who play tennis are the people who love tennis. And to some extent, they watch it, but it's never seemed to reach beyond that niche audience of the true participants. And whereas you compare that with football and basketball and baseball, people who don't play football watch football. People who don't play basketball watch basketball. People who don't, play baseball will watch baseball, but people who don't play tennis don't seem to watch tennis. And if you expose it to a bigger audience with more television coverage, would it expand its coverage base? Would it attract more viewers? Maybe. Personally, I doubt it, but maybe.
Well, this has been a big argument amongst tennis fans, college tennis fans, and here on the show is that we're not real sure why you would want to put college tennis on TV, because it doesn't seem to – I mean, the story that you tell in a college tennis match with the six singles and three doubles would be almost impossible for a newscaster to even – I mean, it would be like herding cats.
Becomes part of it. I mean, in all seriousness, especially when you take it back to a sportscast, it's complicated to explain how a tennis match is played out. I mean, it's even true in golf, for example. I mean, it's similar things. You have these individual scores, you have team winners, etc. But whereas in football, you go, hey, here's two teams. This team scored more points, they win. End of story. Basketball, baseball, hockey, all the same thing. When it gets beyond that, then it almost becomes a case of, well, we'll let the print media handle that, and they can fill up the whole page with all the different breakdowns and how it played out. But I really don't see it. I really don't see it having much of an impact on television, much more so than it has right now. And again, college, certainly in Texas, but I don't, and I mean, maybe in some other regions of the country, there's a little more interest, but there just doesn't seem to be much interest in the local college tennis teams at all.
Well, we've encountered a lot of different names for tennis and the other sports out there, non-revenue generating sports versus revenue generating sports. We've got Olympic sports, so on and so forth. And I want, if you would, can you explain to us what the Power Five conferences are and what their impact is on not just Olympic sports, but just on sports in general? Because this is something that is kind of blown up within the last 6 months.
Yeah, I think the Power Five conferences are going to change the landscape of college athletics, and it might. I think it's well past the time that they need to start doing something about this. But I think what you're going to see in the future, and probably not too distant future, is the five major conferences. You know, like the Big 12, the Southeast Conference, etc. They're going to pretty much start playing by their own rules. They're going to decide this is how we want to play, and I think this will also include this is how we want to pay our players as well. And I think you'll see them generating most of the television revenue, most of the money, as they are now for the most part. And the downside to that is that I think there is the very real possibility that the non-revenue sports are going to be eventually just pushed aside. I don't think there's a great deal of interest at a lot of universities in providing those sports, but I think they're almost forced into it because of whether it be Title IX or all the other rules that they have to play by now. To become an accredited major university in Division I. But
well,
if the Power Five conferences have their way, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I said, but if the Power Five conferences have their way, I think you're going to see them starting to whittle it down and be more football, basketball generated with. Maybe a few teams on the side and some various sports, but I don't think it's going to be great for all of college athletics, certainly. But at the same time, I do think it tends to make financial sense. And in this day and age, where almost everybody seems to be concerned about the almighty dollar, I think it's very possible that you're going to see these universities drive the other sports out and just put their attention and their money to the sports that raise the money.
Well, it is football and basketball that seem to be raising a lot of the money for these universities. Do you have any statistics as far as I know that the college football playoff system was huge as far as business goes. Do you have any statistics as far as how much money they made or how many people watched or that sort of thing?
Well, not at my fingertips, but I mean, I've never bought the argument that a lot of universities make that it's like a break-even proposition. I think everybody cooks the books. Bottom line is, I just don't think there's any doubt that the college football playoff system, you know, made hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, when a university finds the money to pay a football coach, one football coach, $5 million annually, and that football coach has a staff of like 15 people who are all making, in many cases, you know, the lower paid guys are making $250,000 annually. I think it's rather disingenuous for those schools to say that they broke even. I just think the University of Texas, the University of Michigan, Ohio State, all of these schools are making hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, and ESPN with their buying the television rights, and now Fox is wading back into the argument. There's a lot of money on the table out there. And, but I do think most of it is directed, as you mentioned, I think most of it is directed at football and basketball. But it's a little hard to pin down sometimes as to just how much money they're making, because in my personal opinion, the NCAA and the individual universities do a pretty nice job of cooking the books, so it doesn't look like they're making the money that I still insist they actually are.
Do you think that the recent autonomy vote, is this a move away from the NCAA for these Power Five conferences?
Oh, I think so, yeah. The NCAA, the problem that you have, the NCAA is trying to regulate, what is it, like 109, 114, 115, you know, schools. And the bottom line is, you know, what the University of Texas wants to do with their football program isn't anything similar to what, say, Duke wants to do with their football program, or Wake Forest, or Rutgers, or, you know, so many others. And I just think there's been this so they make rules that try to one size fits all. And I think the reality is it's almost impossible to do that. So I know there's been a lot of the major schools, which usually fall under the heading of those Power Five conferences, not every team in those conferences, but that'll kind of shake itself out too as we go along. But there are just certain schools that basically, you know, look at it like a military buildup. You know, they want to throw as much money as they can at their football team to have this great football team. And they don't really care about the tennis team or the golf team or the swim team or, in many cases, even the track team. And I think they're going to find a way to do that. And then when they sit there and say, well, we're willing to do this to help our players, it's impossible for 112 major universities to do that. Because while I do rail against, you know, a lot of the top schools making hundreds of millions of dollars, I do think it's a fact that there are a lot of major universities who don't make money on their football program. I mean, you look at Southern Methodist University here in Dallas. I mean, they've got maybe 10,000-15,000 people in the stands, maybe. And you know, so they've got 85 kids on full scholarship. They've got room and board and all the expenses that go with it. I doubt very seriously that they're making any real money. But these different schools are trying to all play under the one big one-size-fits-all rules of the NCAA, and I think bottom line is they're just tired of it now, and they're going to break off and you know, just pull away from the NCAA and form their own rules and their own committees and their own governing bodies. And it might be chaos for a while, quite frankly, but I do think that's where we're headed.
I couldn't agree more. It seems to be the move to move towards football and basketball because they are
new generation. Well, I think to me the other big problem that nobody seems to really want to discuss yet anyway is if you it seems simple on the surface. Well, let's pay these football players. A lot of these guys are bringing in you know, millions of dollars for their university, and I don't think there's any question about that. But then the question becomes, just like it is at the professional level, how much do you pay, and how do you pay it? Do you pay them all the same? And the argument seems to be that we're going to pay everybody the same. Now, is that really going to last? I mean, human nature is such that if I'm giving the star quarterback on the football team $50,000 a year or whatever it is, pick a number, how long before he's really not satisfied because, you know, the backup offensive tackle who maybe plays five plays a game is getting the same exact amount of money? It never works. It doesn't work at the professional level, and they make millions. And we're dealing with a guy right now, Dez Bryant. His contract is going to pay him $13 million next year, and he's really unhappy about it. He's really unhappy because he wants a guaranteed $40 million. And no matter what you pay these guys, or most of them, not all of them, but most of them, no matter what you pay them, they're never happy. So you back it up to the college level, and you say, well, we're going to give everybody $10,000 a year. That sounds great. Sounds fair. But I'm just telling you, it's going to be hell. It's going to be chaos because the quarterback's not going to be happy making the same amount of money as the backup offensive lineman. And then do you pay the basketball players the same amount of money you pay the football players? Well, I guarantee you the basketball players think they should be paid that. And then it just trickles on down. If you do take it. So we're going to have a baseball team. Do you pay the baseball players? And that's why it's going to be a mess. I mean, I really do. I think it's going to be an absolute mess. And I'm not in favor of a lot of it. Although, I mean, on the surface, I do think the NCAA and major universities, I do think they've taken advantage of the athlete. I really do. And I think there is a better way to do it. But having said that, in order to get there, I think it's still going to be this start and stop and herky-jerky motions back and forth of people complaining because human nature is such that you basically want a dollar more than you're making. And that's true at the highest corporate levels in America, and it's certainly true in college sports as well.
Well, we know that with the Ed O'Bannon trial that it caused athletic directors to kind of reconsider things. Apparently they weren't able to they had to change their scholarships here because they weren't able to do certain things, and then they had to pay for likenesses, and they're trying to do that and so on and so forth. I just don't see how the Olympic sports survive. If you're going to pay these football players, you're not going to pay the swim team $10,000.
No,
you're not going to pay the wrestling team.
No, I don't either. I mean, to me, it's basically been more a case of I just don't – I mean, you have some teams. I mean, you know, University of Texas takes a certain amount of pride, I think, in some of their lower-level teams competing at a high level. But I don't know if that's because they want to or if it's because it's almost mandated that, you know, you've got to have X number of sports, then you have X number of sports, you got to have male and female sports, and – I don't think there's a lot of athletic directors in the country that really want to do that. I mean, SMU's had a great track team over the years, and I've never quite understood the concept, though. I mean, I really don't. They bring in all of these foreign athletes, and they seem to compete at a pretty high level, but I can't begin to understand where the return is to SMU because they get very little attention in the local media, and maybe every 4 years, you know, some guy wins an event at an Olympic event, and they reference that he went to SMU, but I've never quite understood the concept, as to why you spend all this money recruiting foreign athletes. And this, I'm not, this is not an anti-foreign, you know, rant. I'm saying any athlete, but SMU in particular has a lot of foreign athletes and participating in sports that nobody watches, and I don't understand why SMU wants to do that. I'm not sure why any university wants to do that, and I think as it goes forward, although I think that's great for the young person, I think it's great for the environment of a school to introduce more people to the classroom to the campus itself, but I just think there's the very real possibility that they're going to start saying, wait a minute, we can make money playing a better brand of football, we can make money playing a better brand of basketball. Everything else is irrelevant. And unfortunately, at least in the minds of the general public, I think everything else is irrelevant.
I think you're right. I think that's the way that they're moving with the new scholarship rules. I think that the pay-for-play model has been put into effect, and I just don't see how the Olympic sports survive. So do you think that in the long term that these Power Five conferences will make a move to somehow get away from Title IX because they are now pay-for-play?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, it's going to be a harder sell, but I've just heard a lot of complaints over the years about Title IX, and I think it is. I think it's somewhat of a healthy total package environment that it's better. I think without question, it's better for the female athlete because I just don't think many universities would bother to spend the money on the female athlete. Which I would also argue is somewhat wrong, because if you're going to spend money on a men's golf team, which brings in no revenue, why are you so opposed to spending money on a women's tennis team, a women's basketball team? But for some reason, there is that inherent attitude in sports, or so it seems in a lot of areas. So I support it in the general consensus, because I think it's healthier for everybody. But having said that, I think there is a move that these major conferences are going to say, hey, we're not interested in any of that stuff anymore. There are probably schools that will continue to do that. There are probably schools that want to do that, but we don't. We want to play football. We want to play it at the highest level. We want to play basketball. We want to play it at the highest level. And everything else becomes somewhat irrelevant. And then there is that trickle-down effect, as you said, on the Olympic sports. Every 4 years, this is kind of funny to me. Every 4 years, there's this big patriotic push that we're all excited about the Olympics, but it does seem to die off pretty quickly. and at the same time, I've kind of lost interest. I love the Olympics. And maybe I was somewhat naive, but I loved the Olympics when I thought it was the young man who's got a night job and trains in the morning, running the event. And now it's just it's a glorified professional sport. I mean, we've allowed pure professionals into many of the sports, and the ones that aren't the pure professionals are basically professional, because that's, for the most part, that's what they do. I liked it better when the shopkeeper was running the mile. I just did. And so I really don't have much interest in the Olympics anymore. I haven't for quite a while. I'm not impressed that the U.S. basketball team can beat, Bulgaria. It doesn't interest me. And I'm almost more intrigued by the Winter Olympics, and even then, I'm sure some of that's got professional skiers and the like too. But at least they do a nice job of, here's a guy who lives in a hut in Iceland and he ski jumps. So okay, I'm impressed now. Let's watch. But I think a lot of those sports are going to be in trouble, because again, unfortunately, everything seems to be driven by the dollar. And I think our society is out of whack there. I've thought for a long time that our society is just out of whack. But just to show you how bad it is, I mean, you look at the Little League World Series this year. I mean, it was won by a bunch of 13-year-olds that cheated. I mean, what the hell's our world come to? We've got coaches and parents cheating to win a 12-year-old baseball championship, I mean, good God. And it just keeps going. It's not getting any better. It's not getting any better. I'm just not sure where we're headed in this regard. And I think ultimately it always works its way back to the dollars. And football and basketball, that's where the dollars are. So people aren't interested in tennis. People aren't interested in wrestling, one of my favorite sports. People aren't interested in the swim team, the golf team, another one of my favorite sports. But those sports are going to have to fend for themselves, and some will do it better than others.
Well, when you say that about the dollar, we know that the University of Alabama just put in a brand new football complex over there. We know that we apparently found out that the Florida State athletes couldn't eat as much as they wanted to, nor the basketball players. I believe it was at one of the prominent basketball programs. Do you think that these new scholarship rules will help recruiting out for these universities? I mean, are just the small guys just going to be left out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean you're going to just pick up the crumbs. You know, it doesn't mean they are crumbs. They'll probably always be the story of the great athlete who matriculated through some school in the hills of West Virginia or something. But, no, I think for the most part, all the top athletes will go, same thing, all the top athletes will go where the biggest money payoff is. I'd be very surprised if they go anyplace else. There's probably, and there are some, I don't mean to be as cynical as I am, but I wish I wasn't as cynical as I am. But you know, there are student athletes. There are some. They're just not very many. They're not nearly as many as the NCAA would like us to believe. The student athlete is a bit of an oxymoron. And when you look at what the scheduling demands are on the athlete portion of their student athlete moniker, I mean, I think you realize how silly it is. There was a great story recently, ESPN, the magazine or something, but it was like, you know, the classroom schedule alone is damn near impossible to navigate. Because you got to be in the weight room, you know, you're studying all night, you're traveling, basketball teams. Look how much travel the basketball teams do. Are you telling me that the Ohio State basketball team flies into South Carolina on Tuesday? They're in Manhattan, Kansas on Friday, and the kid's going to class and keeping up his schoolwork while he's also lifting weights and practicing the other 3 days that he's not traveling and playing? Really? I mean, really? That must be one hell of an easy college to go to. Because I know a lot of smart people that struggle to maintain a good academic standard, and that's all they do. They go to class. They study at night. They spend time in study halls. And they're finding how difficult it is to maintain a high grade point average at a good university. And here's some kid who, in many cases, is not totally prepared for college life academically, and he's flying around the country twice a week and maintaining a classroom a curriculum that most people couldn't begin to handle. I don't buy it. I haven't bought it for a long time. And the hypocrisy of that's the only thing that I am in favor about this. I've argued for years that these major universities that want to have these semi-pro teams, which I think they are, should basically do just that. Let's go ahead and have your semi-pro team and entertain your boosters and your supporters. And if the kid does want to go to class and learn a little bit along the way, great. Great. If he doesn't, so be it. Send him to shop class. Teach him to be an airplane mechanic. Teach him to be a computer repairman. Teach him some kind of a trade, if he's willing. But don't tell me that he's taking American literature, that he's taking, you know, psychiatric courses and world history courses and all the rest of it, because they're just not. I mean, they're just not. And I would hope and think that if we go with this Power Five deal, that will at least eliminate the hypocrisy. We won't eliminate the problem. We won't eliminate the scandals. We won't eliminate the complaining. But at the very least, I would hope that we could eliminate the hypocrisy. And in my world, that's almost a step forward.
Well, it seems like the only reason that we have the term student-athlete is because of the Olympic sports. I mean, they're the only ones that seem to be contributing to the GPA average, the graduation rate.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think if you, yeah, I mean, a lot of the Olympic sports and the tennis players and the golfers and a lot of these athletes in those sports, I think, do maintain some academic integrity. I think it makes the university feel better about themselves in that regard. But, there's just been too many stories. And it's not fair. I'm not painting everybody with the same brush, but there are just too many football and basketball players and baseball players that come out of college after 2-3 years, and hell, they can't put a sentence together. I mean, hell, Dexter Manley came out of Oklahoma State and he couldn't read. And there's been more than one of those too. You know, I mean, how the hell do you go through 3 years of college, 4 years of college, and you can't even read? I mean, my God, there was a kid named Kevin Ross, went to Creighton, played basketball when I was up there in the 70s. Couldn't read. Had an academic athletic director's assistant, was doing all his coursework, wrote all his papers. Hell, I used to date that woman. I mean, I didn't know she was doing all that. But you know, the kid was an unbelievable basketball player. They just pushed him through. I mean, you have this unbelievable hypocrisy attached to the term student athlete. And then I do think you have, for whatever strange reason, you do have a lot of NCAA rules that are just really unrealistic. I mean, this year was one of the first years that family members were allowed to be reimbursed so they could go watch their sons play in that championship game.
Yeah.
I mean, if a university is going to make hundreds of millions of dollars, can't we at least pay the poor family to fly in to watch their kid play? I mean, you know, can't we buy them a hamburger? Can't we give them a plane ticket if their grandmother dies? No, you can't. You know, if the grandmother dies and the kid needs to go home, can't we at least buy the kid a plane ticket? Well, then the argument becomes, are you going to buy everybody in the university a plane ticket? Well, no, we're not. But that kid is making money for the university. So look, he should be treated differently. I mean, I really think he or she should be. If they're making money for the university, they should be going to school under different rules. And I think that's what the Power Five is trying to do. Now, whether or not it works or not, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But I'm not opposed to all of that. I just, my main argument is just that. How the hell, they keep talking like this is going to solve everything if we just give these kids $10,000-$20,000 of spending money. And I'm like, I'm just laughing at that. I mean, I've just seen it for 30 years. You cannot give a kid enough money to make him happy. It cannot be done. It cannot be done. I'll give you one of my favorite stories. I had a photographer working for me one time, and that's all he ever did was bitch about his salary. So I said to him, I said, how about this? I'm going to give you $250,000 a year. Will you shut up? And he said, oh, my God, if you paid me $250,000 a year, he said, you'd never hear another peep from me. I said, so no matter what, if I pay you $250,000 a year, you'll put a smile on your face and you won't bitch and complain anymore. And he said, absolutely. And I said, okay, it's done. And I said, oh, by the way, just so you know, I'm paying the other photographer $260,000 a year. It wasn't 10 seconds before he said, well, why the hell is he getting $10,000 more than me? I swear to God. And I just started laughing. And I said, see, you make my point. You know, you make my point. You promised me 10 seconds ago that if I gave you $250,000, you would never bitch again. And then you found out that somebody else is making $260,000, and now you're unhappy again. I mean, you can't pay somebody enough money. There is no such thing. There is no such thing. People always think there is, but there just isn't. I mean, it's just laugh out loud funny to me when people think that money will end all their complaints and all their problems, because you know, there's like college football coaches right now making $3, $4, $5 million a year, and they're bitching because they found out that Nick Saban went to 6. Well, if Saban goes to 6, I got to go to 7, and oh my God.
It seems like there are probably 15 antitrust lawsuits out there against the NCAA. You know, the last question I have for you today is how do you think that the NCAA still operates as an amateur organization?
Well, I don't think they have operated as an amateur organization for a long time, so it won't be a major shift for them. But yeah, I mean, I think there's still a place. I think they'll find a niche because again, you know, when you mention the Power Five, I mean, you're really talking about, you know, 50 to 60 schools out of say 100 and plus, you know, of what I would consider major universities. And I think all of those other universities are going to want somebody to basically be the governing body. I think they're smart enough to realize that everybody can't play by their own rules. I mean, it just doesn't work. You have to have, if you're going to have anything, and it's true at every level. I mean, the National Football League has a governing body that establishes the rules. I mean, not every team just goes out and does whatever they want. It you couldn't have a competitive environment that way. So the NCAA will have a niche. They'll have a role. They'll have to change. I think they're going to have to listen more to the individual universities than I think they have in the past. But there's a place and there's a need for an NCAA. But I just think it's been run with kind of an iron fist, much like the Olympics. You keep mentioning the Olympics. I mean, it's much like the way the Olympics has always been accused of being run. You know, they hold countries hostage. They demand these great concessions from everybody. And now the athlete has started to take a little more control of their own destiny. And they're, you know, these O'Bannon lawsuits and the like are these are a good thing. I mean, they've been used and taken advantage of for decades. I don't think there's any question about that. So they're going to have to find a way to listen more to the athlete and, by extension, the university. But hopefully there'll always be amateur athletics. As much as we can call it amateur athletics, I still kind of like it. You know, we are slowly sliding away from that. I mean, there's not many in my world. There's not many real feel-good stories anymore. I just don't get too excited about anything that tries to pass itself off as a feel-good story, and the Little League World Series only reinforced that. You know?
It seems like with the Power Five that they were going with about 64 teams, which was the automatic number for the NCAA tournament. They've had the football playoff system, which they found, and the bowl system, which they know is a revenue generator. It just seems like that they're trying to separate themselves from an amateur-type status onto a more of a, like you say, a semi-pro status.
Yeah, I think it is semi-pro. And they're working hand-in-hand with, you know, with the professional teams, trying to create these arbitrary rules about when a kid is eligible to play in the pros. It's another one of the great arguments in basketball right now that they created this arbitrary rule that a kid has to be 1 year out of college. Why? You know, I mean, if a woman comes out of high school and she's the best actress in the local play, she can go straight to Hollywood and start making movies. They don't tell that woman that she has to go to college for a year. But if a kid comes out of school and wants to sign a recording contract because he's got an unbelievable voice, they don't say to that kid, you have to go to college for a year first. So why do we do it to the young athletes? You know, but it's part of the system where the pros don't really want the 18-year-old kid unless he's LeBron James or something. But, well, even in your favorite sport, tennis here, you know, What was it? Didn't they pass a rule? I mean, the women now have to be 14 or something, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a few years back, because they were kind of getting embarrassed by the fact that teenage girls were winning all these championships. And
yes, sir.
You know, on the one hand, why? Just an arbitrary rule, you know, just to kind of make our sport look better, you know. And that's what the colleges and the pros are trying to do right now, is that, you know, the NFL has a 2-year requirement for college because they know that it's basically a free minor league system. Basketball has a 1-year rule. Baseball has no rule. I mean, a kid can come straight out of baseball and go straight to professional baseball. Why? or better yet, why not? You know, if the kid's good enough and the professional team wants to pay him, but in baseball, they've always had this structured minor league system. So baseball accepts the fact that we will train our kids ourselves, for the most part, and basketball and football has always benefited from a free minor league system, i.e. the colleges. And they'll work together, and then somebody will file another lawsuit, and then we'll go back to court, and we'll start all over again. Because I really find myself bouncing back and forth. Because college basketball is a joke right now, for example. I mean, nobody cares about college basketball except for 3 weeks in March.
Right, right.
And, you know, we all get an office pool, and hell, we can't name three kids on any team, but we all love Duke, we all love Kentucky or whatever. And they need a better identity. You know, back like when I was a kid, I mean, Larry Bird played 4 years at Indiana State. Oh, my God. By the time he got out of Indiana State, he was a household name. Today, Larry Bird would have played 1 year and been gone straight to the pros, and he would have been fine. And that's... individually, it's absolutely the only right thing you can do. But I liked it better in the old ways. As a fan, as a spectator, I liked it better. But I've always kind of thought that, hey, if you're good enough to play, you're good enough to play. And I would say it in tennis. I would say it in golf. Jordan Spieth left the University of Texas after 1 year to play professional golf, making a fortune at 19 years of age. Why should there be a law that says he can't play golf until he's 20 or something? Well, why? Which is what the NBA is trying to get now. And I'm like, why? And it is back to that dollar sign, because for the most part, the NBA benefits from having a free minor league system, and the universities are sitting there saying that if we're going to be your minor league system, well, then you've got to help us, and you've got to force these kids to come play for us for free. And that's so the NBA did. I mean, that's basically exactly what they did. The NBA said, okay, we will help the universities by forcing these kids to play for free. How the hell do you get that through a court system in America? And I think when and if they get around to challenging it, it'll be thrown out. Because you just can't do that in America. Or at least last time I checked, you can't do it. And that's what I'm saying. All these other sports are just going to get swept up in this thing, because I just keep saying this over and over. There's only one thing in play here. It's money.
Yeah.
It's always money. A lot of people like to pay lip service to how much they care about Olympic sports and, oh, I love women's sports and I believe in equal rights. They don't care about any of that. They don't care about any of that. They just care about the money. And they care about doing whatever it takes to make them look like they're doing the right thing to justify their standing with the NCAA as it stands now, and the federal government as it pertains to Title IX. But individually, I don't think there's many athletic directors in America who care about that stuff. And as we move forward, I think we're going to see that rather harshly.
I couldn't agree more, Mr. Hansen, and I want to thank you for coming on today to explain the money issue that's involved in college sports, because you've done a wonderful job with that today.
Well, I appreciate it. I do. It does sound like a broken record sometimes, but that's, it's like in every situation, when you're trying to find the answer to a solution, just follow the money, and it'll eventually get you there. And that's what we're going to have to do when it comes to the NCAA and college athletics and all the other sports that go along with it.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, and have a great day, and hope to see some college tennis on TV soon.
I'll try to work something in there for you. All right, you bet. Thanks. Bye.
Right, thank you. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Dale Hansen. Dale is, like I said, a sports broadcaster out of the DFW area. And just wanted to bring you into his world just a little bit and let you know why college tennis, why tennis just in general is not shown on TV, but more importantly, why we could be losing the Olympic sports at the collegiate level. And you see that with his answers there, that that football and basketball are ruling, so to speak, and just as Coach Bayless said, there might be reason to be concerned that at least from the Power Five conferences standpoint, they might be on the way out for the non-revenue generating sports. So hopefully the rest of the NCAA Division I world kind of breaks away from that attitude and gets more back to its amateur organization status. So I want to thank him for coming on the air today, and hopefully we'll learn something from his interview today. I want to thank you for listening in today, and if you get a chance, it's been snowing and icing here in Texas, and we haven't been able to do much any tennis, but if you get a chance, get out there and hit some tennis balls. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.